welcome to this edition of Creator Talks. I'm your host, Christopher Calloway. My guest today is the effervescent and charming Rachel Smith. She hails from the UK. She's a writer, a cartoonist. She has several works of great importance that we talk about on today's show. I begin by asking about her interest in comics and how she began working in comics, first for a local newspaper, and then later for Titan Comics on a backup cartoon in Doctor Who number 10, year 2. And that ongoing backup was called A Rose by Any Other Name. Other work that she's published includes House Party and Artificial Flowers. But on today's show, I focus on three publications of hers. The first, Wired Up Wrong. The book is a collection of her autobiographical comic strips about her dealing with depression and anxiety. The other book we talk about is Jack and Lucy, which was written by Rachel and illustrated by Jacob Phillips. It's the story of two troubled teens who help each other figure out their problems. And finally, we close with her work on Isabella and Blodwyn, a 200-page color hardback she's working on currently. It'll be published by Unbound, and you can support that book. It's kind of like a Kickstarter, but there's no deadline for this one, so you can support her in putting together this graphic novel. In short, it's a graphic novel about growing up, fitting in, and a witch from a bottle determined to wreak havoc. I also ask Rachel about the blog she contributes to emphasize this, and close out the show with the fun questions I ask all my guests. So please welcome Rachel Smith, here now on Creator Talks. Rachel, welcome to Creator Talks.
Thank you. Hi.
You know, let's go back to when you first started reading comics, and I understand your favorite that got you into it was Sonic. Is that Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah.
And what was it about Sonic?
I loved the Mega Drive games when I was a kid. That was like the first sort of video games that I really, really loved. And then my dad bought me the first comic because he knew that I liked drawing and stuff. So it was kind of like both of my loves together. So I really, really liked it. And I remember like lying on the living room floor, copying all the pictures into my sketchbook. And I don't know, and there was something about that world, you know, the planet Mobius, that just really got my imagination going a little bit. But yeah, that was my first comic love.
Did you start drawing at a very young age?
Yes, as soon as I was old enough to hold a pencil, I've just been drawing. My favorite thing to do ever. So on like long-haul flights, for example, my mum and dad just had to get me like a ream of A4 paper and a biro, and I was happy. You know, I was a pretty cheap kid to entertain.
Now, there was a point, like happens to a lot of kids, that you drifted away from comics, and I did too. Mine was mainly from ennui. I was just like, nah. But something, actually someone's work, brought you back. Who was that?
For some reason, even having started with Sonic, I started seeing a lot of superhero comics. That kind of story doesn't really turn me on very much. And then it wasn't until Scott Pilgrim by Brian Lee O'Malley came out, and my boyfriend at the time was reading the books, and the penny sort of dropped when I started reading those. I was like, oh, comics can just be about anything. They're a medium, not a genre. And I felt really silly. Now I love them. And it's my life.
Do you find people that don't read comics, is their perception that they are just superhero comics? I'm wondering, for the general public, what you're hearing, what do they think? Like, for example, someone I know, an acquaintance, did not know that comics were still being made. And I was like,
oh,
taken
wow.
aback, because I, you know, I'm in my own little bubble here of people that read comics, make comics. And I mentioned something about Afterlife with Archie, and they make Archie comics still. I'm like, yeah. Do you hear that too from people?
A little bit. The most common occurrence of it is at Comic Cons when I'm tabling, and it's usually the parents of a kid who really wanted to come to Comic Con, and they're a bit sort of bewildered by the whole thing. And I make this one comic about a cat called Flimsy, and sometimes I get parents or people reading that and saying, oh, I don't like comics, but I like this. And I'm always like, well, surprise, you like comics. Like, they're not just... And yet it's usually people that just think that comics are Spider-Man and Batman. Yeah, I always have to remind them that it is a medium and not a genre, and that there's comics about everything. I mean, saying you don't like comics, I think, is perverse of saying you don't like TV or you don't like films. But yeah, I mean, and it is a perverse thing to say, but we're not quite there yet with the public opinion, I don't think. But we're getting there. We're getting there. They're better at it in Europe, I think. They're a lot more open-minded to comics. In the UK and the US, I think people are still dragging their feet a little bit.
Now, your first job in comics, if I understand this, you were submitting work to your local newspaper.
Yeah, I actually worked as like an admin assistant for the local newspaper. And at the time, I was doing my webcomic One Good Thing, and I used to draw it on my lunch breaks. So literally, I was just in the right place at the right time, and the editor saw me drawing and was like, oh, do you comics? And I was like, yeah. And he said, well, we're starting this new supplement magazine. Do you want to do a comic about... The local newspaper was in Leicester, and he was like, do you want to do a comic about Leicester and what it's like to live in Leicester? And I was like, yes, that would be amazing. So yeah, that was my first paid comic gig. And that just came about because I drew on my lunch breaks. So, yeah.
Did they give you any feedback, or did they give you more latitude since that was your project?
They pretty much let me do what I want, which was nice. I got edited a few times when the editor didn't understand my joke and stuff, but which was odd because the supplement magazine was mainly for young women. So I kind of, you know, target it at that. But my editor was like this 50-year-old white guy, and it was like, well, I don't know. It was a nice relationship most of the time.
Did you get any fan mail, any emails, any letters?
I don't think I got any mail. I got the odd tweet every now and again saying, oh, I liked you. I like this week's strip and stuff. So, yeah, I don't think anyone wrote in. That would have been impressive.
But, that's a lot of work. People don't do that anymore. Yeah. Now, you also worked on a comic that I am a big fan of, and you worked on The Tenth Doctor. That's the David Tennant Doctor. Not only did you do a few variant covers, but you also did a monthly one- or two-page strip in the back, A Rose by Any Other Name. About that strip, was that inspired, if I remember, I'm trying to think back now because I saw all the episodes, was that when the Doctor had to leave Rose in this parallel dimension? She couldn't leave it, he couldn't get her out, and that was where they split her from the show.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a very, very sad episode when they say goodbye, but I kind of imagined what he would do directly after that, you know, being a bit sort of, because it's kind of like a breakup. I know they were never officially like boyfriend and girlfriend, but it did feel very much like a breakup. So I just had him do a lot of very cliche breakup things, the first of which is that he buys a cat and the cat becomes his new companion on the TARDIS, and he names the cat Rose rather desperately. So yeah, and then it's about his relationship with his cat and him also continuing to do very cliche breakup things, like he wants to get a weird haircut, or he starts a band, or he, you know, just trying to find things to fill the void that Rose, the person, has left in his life. It's a funny strip. And then I wrote an ending for that, and then I started still doing the backup strips, but sort of focusing more on the monsters and the villains. So every month, they'd find this monster and they'd think they were getting into trouble, but then they would actually just have quite a menial job. Works in the Apple store behind the Genius Bar, and he's traded his orb thing for an Apple Watch and stuff. And yeah, they were quite funny. They were quite funny. I think I did about 25 of those as well.
Is David Tennant your favorite Doctor?
Yeah, when I got the gig, well, when I was asked to submit a pitch for the Doctor Who gig, I actually hadn't watched any Doctor Who. I know that's really bad. So I said, yes, I'll do a pitch. And then my editor said, well, you can just pick. So I panicked and I said David Tennant because he was the one I fancied the most. So then I just went home and I binge watched like loads of David Tennant episodes. And my housemate at the time would like go to work and leave me watching Doctor Who, and then she'd get back and she'd just be like, is this your job now? Is this what you're doing? I was like, yeah, I guess so. Like, so I did my research. I did my research. Luckily, I liked the show. I was like, oh my God, what if I hate it and I have to do comics about it? But luckily, I really enjoyed it. There's a really nice, warm humor about it that I get across in my comics as well.
Was there a favorite episode of yours that David Tennant was in as the Doctor?
The one where he's in the spacesuit and he's dangling down into the hall. What is that one? That scene really got to me.
I know what you're referring to. I can't think of the name.
Yeah. And he very, very nearly says, I love you to Rose, but he doesn't.
It was like Satan's Pit or something like that. People will correct me, but it was something about a pit. I think that
Yeah.
was in the title. The one I liked that really hit me was Human Nature, which was a Seventh Doctor story. And actually, that's one that Paul Cornell wrote for, I think, Virgin Books. And then they adapted it with the David Tennant Doctor. And it was a two-parter. And that one, I was rewatching it just to kind of do a little research. And I wound up watching the whole thing, like back-to-back episodes again, because I was so wrapped up in it again. But yeah, he was phenomenal. Have you ever met anyone that played the Doctor?
No, unfortunately. I'd love to, but no, I'm not that important in the Titan in the Titan house, I don't think. I know Rachel Stott has met Capaldi, the more famous Rachel is given those kind of opportunities. But no, I'd love to. I've worked with Paul Cornell before. He's written a couple of backups for the Doctor Who series. And I'm working on one of his scripts at the moment, actually, for have you heard of the 24 panels? Kieran Gillen is editing it. People write scripts that are up to 24 panels long, so they're all quite short stories. And then he's going to put them all in an anthology, and all the proceeds from it will go to the survivors of the Grenfell fire in London. But yeah, Paul Cornell's written me this really sweet script. I'm really enjoying working on it. I probably can't tell you too much about it because it's not been announced, but yeah. It's called 24 Panels.
Now, other comic work that you did, or at least you made a pitch for or tried out for, was Squirrel Girl from Marvel. You did a test page.
Yeah.
Did you get any feedback on that?
I didn't.
Oh.
I managed to get a portfolio review a couple of years ago at London Super Comic Con with CB Cebulski, and that was really helpful. And he gave me a contact at Marvel and said, look, talk to this guy and pitch to him. So I did, and I got sent a Squirrel Girl script, which I was thrilled about because I love that. I love that comic. I did the pitch, it was like 4 pages. And then I just never heard back, and I kept emailing going, oh, so did you not like it? Do you want me to do another script? Like, I don't mind. And but yeah, I guess they're super busy. I mean, I've probably just been put in a pile of artists' names that they know they can get in touch with if they need someone, but they must have so many. They must have so many on their database.
They'll come around.
But yeah, if I ever see Stevie again, I'll give him a nudge, but yeah, there's part of me that isn't sure if I'm even ready for that yet, but I don't know. Maybe I'm being hard on myself. But it was nice to be able to pitch and to even be on the Marvel's radar at all was pretty cool. And it was fun to draw Squirrel Girl because I love her.
But you have done a few books. Your first one. More than a few, but your first one was House Party in 2013, and you followed that with Artificial Flowers. Now, I'm wondering, were these partly autobiographical in the sense that it was about getting through art school and then trying to become successful as an artist?
Yeah, so in House Party is about these sort of 20-something-year-olds who have just finished uni and they're still living in a house together and they've all had to go out and get normal jobs that don't really relate to any of their creative degrees. And which was kind of how I felt. I felt a little bit lost when I finished uni and I wasn't really sure what to do with myself. And certainly that feeling, it was the same in the book. The characters in the book kind of deal with it in a different way than I did. But yeah, there's certainly elements of me in all those characters. The most similar being Siobhan, who's studied fine art and is trying to get a job in the art world. So Artificial Flowers kind of follows her story a bit closely, like what she did after House Party. Yeah, I certainly found the art world quite elitist and difficult to get into, either as an artist or as a curator or a gallery assistant or anything like that. For me, it felt very shut off, even though it's what I'd studied, which is kind of frustrating because I knew that I would be good at this job, but just nobody was giving me a chance. That frustration, I kind of put that into writing Siobhan's character. But yeah, there's certainly aspects of me in all of them.
Now, one book that has, well, it's all you, and it tells very much about you, it's very personal, is Wired Up Wrong. You printed some, and the demand was so great that you had to do a Kickstarter to make more.
So the first iteration of Wired at Wrong was 40 pages long. It was quite a small little square book. At the time, I had a Patreon going on where I do like a diary comic every day, and people really liked those. And I've struggled with depression and anxiety for most of my life. And I thought, well, this might be something that people will relate to. So I'll do a little book just about the specific strips that touched on that and my coping mechanisms for that, because people seem to get a kick out of them on Patreon. So yeah, I printed a really small print run. I think it was like about 400 or something. And I took them to the Thought Bubble convention in Leeds. And I sold like a quarter of my print run at that show, and I was like, oh my gosh, okay. And people were buying it on the Saturday and saying, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. I showed my girlfriend, and it helped me explain how I've been feeling and helped me communicate my frustrations, and I was just like, oh wow, okay. Because I thought people would read the book and just go, oh, Rachel's a bit weird. But instead they were saying, oh my god, I'm like this too. And so I sold out the print run pretty fast, and I was like, well, we need to get more printed, but rather than just reprint the small book, why don't I kickstart it and get the funds together to hopefully make something really special? So I added 100 pages and I did a new cover and everything, and yeah, it went really well. We got like 200% funded, I think. I asked for $6,000 and I got like 12.5 or something silly like that. So yeah, it went really well. And it's been one of my best-selling books. Everyone finds it really helpful, which is an amazing feeling that I'm helping people that are struggling with similar things than I do, you know? It makes it all worth it.
It is very helpful, and I really enjoyed reading it. I had a hard time putting it down. You had a couple of things in there that I thought were really interesting. There were two dogs that represented your anxiety and depression, Barky and Worse Barky.
Yeah.
And please explain the difference between the two and why one you wouldn't think would be easier to reject, but actually is, and why that is.
Barky is sort of small, kind of very sharp looking little black dog. And he always has like cross, angry eyes. And then Worse Barky is this huge, big, like fluffy gray dog. Who's really cuddly. People get mistaken for this all the time, but the big cuddly one is Worse, because I believe him, because he looks friendly. I sort of use the metaphor of cuddling up with him as kind of wallowing and just kind of letting these feelings overcome me and just sort of lying down and going, yeah, okay, I'm not going to leave the house today. And the big Barky is Worse, because he blocks the door and he lies on top of me in bed, so I can't get up. The little evil-looking Barky is bad as well, but he's easier to stand up to because I know he's wrong. I can see that he's evil, and he's easier for me to go, no, I'm going to go out today. And I make him smaller when I'm like that, and so I can like fit him in my pocket and go out. Whereas the big one doesn't change size. He's always big and unmovable. Has that explained it very well? I feel like I've just rambled.
No, yes, that's perfect. Perfectly explained. Okay. I thought that was very interesting that people would mix those up, but I could see why. If something is, okay, it seems comfortable. Like, yeah, I guess so. And you just kind of roll with it versus that's flat out ridiculous. And it's easier to push away. But another thing that you use to explain the emotions, the swings that you go through, is the two little guys who have the wheel of feels. That's, at times, it seems so random what the heck was happening to you.
Yeah, so I have these two little game show hosts that live in my head. And this was kind of just to explain how sometimes I feel like my responses to things are not correct. Sometimes they just feel really random. Like I will cry at a leaf, or I will, you know, really hurt myself and start laughing. Like it's really weird. And I just feel like Wired at Wrong. That's kind of where the name comes from. I just feel really disconnected with the world sometimes. And like, I'm just not responding correctly like everybody else. I explained that mainly to myself, but I explained that with these two little game show hosts that live in my head, and they spin the wheel of feels just to see how I'm going to react to something. And that's how random it feels sometimes. Like it is just a wheel being spun. rather than going, okay, this is sad, so I'll feel sad. It's just like, no, just spin the wheel and maybe I'll laugh and maybe I'll get horny, maybe I'll cry.
Another thing you touch on in the book, which is very difficult to write about, and it's about a teacher that you had that was basically harassing you, and it's a difficult topic, and you actually gave a little warning before that section and gave it a different border because you did not want to trigger accidentally certain emotions of people that have been through a similar situation, and it's very hard to relive some of that even if you're hearing somebody else's story. So you put a warning up, and then you went through this, and what is so impressive about this, and you definitely go into this, is how your mom had your back. Like, she stood up for you, and that doesn't always happen. The adults assume, well, what did you do? What did you do wrong? And that was a great story of how she really stood up for you.
Yeah, my mum's pretty awesome. That all could have gone wrong. I mean, it was a horrible thing to have happen to me, but I was really lucky with how it played out. And yeah, a lot of parents aren't as understanding, like the headmaster in the book, you know, he's sort of going, well, you wear the wrong uniform sometimes, is that to get his attention? And you know, they kind of always think that you're enjoying this, enjoying the extra attention. And I talk about how I kind of did at the beginning, because I didn't really have a lot of friends in school, and most of the teachers weren't really very impressed with me. I was pretty normal. I didn't really warrant any extra attention. But yeah, this graphics teacher, for some reason, thought I was something really special. But those feelings came across in a very inappropriate way, which I didn't really, and it happened so slowly, I didn't really notice it getting inappropriate. But yeah, then it got to the point where I was very upset and I stopped going to school. And yeah, but it's basically a story about how amazing my mum is. And I talk about it at the end of it, like, it's not even that unusual a story, which is what makes it quite sad. And it has the potential to trigger some people, which is why I put the warning up. And I hope it doesn't upset people. I hope it makes people feel less alone, maybe that have gone through a similar thing in the workplace or whatever. The sort of hashtag Me Too movement inspired me to put that story in there, even though it's not really anything to do with depression or what the main book is about. But yeah, I wanted to touch upon that just to get it out of my brain, really, just to, so it's out of my brain and in a book and I don't have to worry about it anymore.
And just like you received some very positive feedback about explaining how to deal with anxiety and depression, did you also get a lot of feedback about that section of the book?
Yeah, people told me I was really brave to tell that story. And I don't know, I didn't really feel brave. It felt more cathartic for me when I was doing it. I felt like I was taking it out of my head where it's been sitting for 17 years. The Me Too movement helped with that a lot. I was like, oh, this isn't affecting me as much as it used to, because I know it's not just me. So yeah, no, I've had some lovely feedback from all of the book, really. Just people saying how much it's helped them and helped them communicate how they feel sometimes to friends and family. And that's amazing. It's really nice.
And you continue to help people understand these things and know that they're not alone. For example, another book you just did, Jack and Lucy. It's a 16-page comic, and you worked with artist Jacob Phillips, and this one you wrote. Interestingly, it was based on a performance of A Standard Day by the Oldham Theater Workshop for young people, and that actually inspired the book. Please share what Jack and Lucy is about and who is the target audience for that book.
Yeah, I would say young adults, sort of maybe high school. I mean, but it's all ages, really. I mean, there's no bad language or anything in it. But yeah, it was specifically for young people that came to the workshops that we did with Oldham Library. I did 5 of these workshops with Jacob and some of the library staff. We watched this production called The Standard Day, which was awesome. It was really good. And that kind of talked about things like not being able to come out, feeling like a different person on social media than you do in real life, and feeling very shy and not being able to communicate and all these things. And then afterwards, in the workshops, we would sit with groups of kids and we would talk about how the performances made them feel, and then encourage them to sort of talk about their own lives and you know, which characters they related to and how they felt about those things. And then I would scribble away in my notebook. Yeah, and then after the 5 workshops, I went away and looked at all these things that these kids had been saying, all the things that they were worried about, and I tried to represent the ones that cropped up the most in these two characters, Jack and Lucy. And so the comic is about two old friends who've kind of drifted apart a little bit. They meet up. And the comic's kind of just about a conversation between these two characters. But it's very powerful. And the kids gave me some really good ideas. So Jack's problem is visually represented by this rat that's gnawing on the back of his head, which was how one of the young people explained how it felt for them. And then Lucy's problems are represented by these hands around her neck, which again was a really nice visual way that the young people explained not being able to communicate properly. So yeah, it kind of just grew from there. So I am the writer, but I don't feel I can take all the credit because a lot of these ideas came from the young people. So yeah, it was kind of a collaboration. And then Jacob did such a brilliant job drawing it. He's made everything come alive. Every page he sent me, it was like getting a gift. It was so good. Because I've never written anything that someone else has drawn before. So that was a really nice nice experience for me. I hope I get to do it again with more artists.
Oh, it's a fantastic book. Is that a free comic?
Yes, absolutely. So you can pick it up from any library, I think in the northwest of England. We've also got a few in a bunch of comic shops around the UK. If you can't get hold of it and you're in the UK, I'm selling it on my online shop. All you have to pay is 92 pence, which covers a second class stamp and the envelope. If you're not in the UK, or if you just don't fancy, if you're more of a digital person, Oldham Libraries tweeted the link that you can just download the PDF. So it's pretty available to everyone who wants to read it. I'd really encourage people to read it because I think it's a really good book.
And all the books we've talked about so far, they're in your ET shop.
Yes, that's right.
Before we get to your current project, I just want to mention one more thing that you've contributed to, which I think is very important for people to know about. It is a blog. It is a website called Empathize This, and it's a platform for marginalized voices in the comics medium, and you've contributed to that. You did a strip about a kid who's bullied for being asexual, which is great because first, kids were being bullied and are being bullied sometimes for having a different sexual orientation. And if they choose to opt out, they're still getting bullied. It's crazy. But again, having a voice, somebody else they can, read about and relate to is very important. So that was another comic strip that you contributed. Have you done others for that site?
Yeah. Just to explain, Empathize This, my work for them is really important to me. What happens is people anonymously submit their stories about their life. Some of them get picked out. There's me and a bunch of other artists who work for them, but some of them get sent to me, like the asexual one. There was one about sort of being adopted and having a different heritage than your parents. There was one about racism, and there was one about someone with an eating disorder. But yeah, they're all stories that I don't write. They're all other people's stories, but I just interpret them into comics. But yeah, it is sort of giving marginalized people a voice that they maybe don't feel that they have. And I think that's really, really important to explain these problems to people that don't understand them very well, maybe. And just to get these people's voices heard, I think is really important. But I'd encourage people to go to the Empathize This website and just look at all the comics because they're all amazing.
And your latest project is Isabella and Bloodwind, published by Unbound. And it's a graphic novel about growing up, fitting in, and a witch from a bottle determined to wreak havoc. Now, the story is based on an actual bottle that was donated to a museum, and the donor had a certain story behind it when they donated it. Please tell us about that story and how that inspired your book.
The book is based on a bottle, which is real, and you can go and see it. It's in the Pitt Rivers Museum in Oxford in England. And it was donated to the museum in 1915 by a lady from Sussex. And she said that the museum could have it on the one condition that they never open it, because she was convinced there was a witch inside. And so my book is about what would happen if someone did open it.
Why do you believe that this book is your most ambitious project to date?
Well, it's the longest. It's going to be about 200 pages. I'm really trying to push myself with this one. I'm way out of my comfort zone right now. It took me the longest to write. It's taking me the longest to do. I'm trying to be a lot more ambitious with my page layouts. I'm trying to pull my camera out a lot more, do a lot more establishing shots. So yeah, just for those reasons, really, I'm really pushing myself as a creator.
Now, it's on the Unbound website where you can make a pledge. And what are some of the perks that people that back the book can get?
So you can just get the book if you wish. You can get the book with an exclusive book plate, which I have yet to draw, but it will be awesome. You can even get a portfolio review with me if you're an aspiring creator and you just want some advice on being a full-time comic person like me. You can get commissions. You can get signed and sketched in books. Yeah, there's all sorts on there. And rewards start from just £10. So, oh, and you can get original art that's used in the book as well, which has been quite a popular pledge.
Now, is there a cutoff date or a deadline for people to make a pledge?
There's not at the moment. We're nearly a quarter of the way there right now, so it is happening quite fast. Like, my editor keeps telling me to not worry about it because it's always going to be a lot slower than something like Kickstarter because there isn't a cutoff date. The reason I've gone with Unbound is because I kind of knew that I could crowdfund again, but I didn't want to do it on my own. So with Unbound, it's kind of the best of both worlds. I get an editor and I get people marketing for me and doing promo and stuff. So I can just get on with doing the book, which really needs doing. And there's a lot more of it this time. We're hoping to have the book out next spring. So sort of maybe March next year.
Okay. And I will put a link to that in the show notes so people can check it out. It's on unbound.com. And they can look up the project there. And now, I have fun questions for you that I ask all my guests. And the reason I do this is so that people get to know more about you as a creator, you as a person. So we won't be talking about comics per se, but about other things about you. And my first question, easy one, what do you like to do for rest and relaxation?
I like to play video games. I'm very much enjoying Breath of the Wild at the moment, the Zelda game. I know it's been out for a while, but I'm quite slow and I'm very thorough. So a game will last me quite a while. I love games like that. The Witcher, and I like sort of puzzle story-led games. I'm terrible at first-person shooters, but I enjoy them now and again, even though I'm bad. And I enjoy drinking. So yeah, those are the big two.
We're going to get to drinking in a bit.
If I get to do both at once, that's amazing. That's a good day.
Now, thinking back to a birthday that you had, is there one that stands out to you, either because someone that was there, where you were, the gifts? What was it about that birthday, for good or bad, that stands out for you?
Same thing for my birthday every year, which is get drunk and watch Jurassic Park with my friends. And we play drinking games on Jurassic Park. So yeah, all of them. I mean, not when I was too young to drink, obviously, but that's what I do for my birthday every year.
Every year, okay.
Every year.
Still thinking back about when you were a teenager, you know, somewhere like 12 or something like that. What posters or pictures did you have on your wall, and what were you listening to music-wise?
I think I had a Leonardo DiCaprio poster, and I think I had you probably won't know this band because they were just the UK, I think, because there was five boys in this band. It's a very imaginative name. But yeah, I really fancied one of them and I had the poster on my wall. They were called Five. And yeah, so I had the poster of them and I was listening to them. And Bewitched. Do you know Bewitched?
I don't.
Okay. They were this Irish, like, really terrible, really bad, but I loved them. Things like Destiny's Child and stuff like that. And they're not too bad. They're not as embarrassing as Bewitched. But yeah. Yeah, but Leo, I remember the poster of Leo DiCaprio. I can picture it now. I used to kiss it. Wait, edit that out. No, don't. Oh, God.
Was it just him or was it from a movie?
It was just him.
Oh, okay. Now, if you were stuck on a deserted island, not with your poster of Leonardo DiCaprio, but just you were stuck on the island.
Mm-hmm. Not allowed that.
What is one book or graphic novel or a collection of graphic novels, if they're all related, or book that you would want to have with you? And it doesn't have to be practical. One of the answers I get is, how to get off the island? Of course, you know, how to build a boat, sure. But I mean, for fun, for pleasure, to comfort yourself, or, you know, whatever you like to read, what would be that one book you would take with you?
So I'm allowed like a collection of books if they're all the same.
Yeah. I mean, we don't want to go like the Howls and Gilligan's Island where they have, you know, a trunk full of clothing and everything else. But we're saying one book, but you can have a few books if they're all related. Lord of the Rings, something like that.
Okay. Am I allowed the whole of Love and Rockets?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Then I pick that. Yeah, they're my favorite books.
Now, here's a hypothetical question, just like the last one. If a toy company made an action figure of you, what would be your accessory you'd want with your action figure?
I would like to say like a sketch pad and a pencil, but all I know for a fact, or every single one of my friends would say a glass of red wine. So that.
Okay. So that is my next question, your beverage of choice. And after reading your book and what you just said, it is red wine.
Yep, that's correct.
Now, what kind do you like? Or does it matter? I mean, is it Merlot, Cabernet, blend?
If I'm ordering at a bar and I'm feeling a bit flush, I'll get a Malbec. But I'm actually trying not to refine my palate too much so that I don't have to spend too much money on it. So yeah, I don't want to be a wine snob because I can't afford to be a wine snob. So I try and stay within the sort of £7 bottles of wine if I can.
That's a new game that I'm playing now when I go to this large wine store near us. We both like to drink wine. Red wine is our thing when it comes to wine. And I try to find the least expensive wine that I can that tastes good. I really like, you know, not something I
Okay.
just have to choke down. And it's fun because here in the US, you know, I look for something that's like $5.99 or $6.99. Seven's like the
Okay.
fancy bottle. Because I mean, I've had good ones and I'm like, wow, this is really good. I can see the value. I mean, not crazy, crazy expensive, maybe something twice as much as I was usually spend. But then I'm thinking on a regular basis, that's just not going to happen. Because we're not wine
Yeah.
snobs, you know? When we like to have some wine, is watching a movie, watching TV, a show we like to always follow, get the wine out. And I used to buy the boxed wine here in the US, and that's very economical. And there's some very good ones. The problem is, it's too easy because you just tip the spout and out it comes, and you really don't know how much you're having, you know?
Exactly. And you don't know how far down it is in
Right. And
the
it's like, oh, top me off. Okay. And even if, you know, you're not done, I'll just top you off. Then you have no idea what you're consuming. And then next thing you know, it's morning, and that's no good.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're topping up rather than finishing a glass and starting a new one, you have no idea how
Right.
much you've drank at all.
And with the bottle, when it's gone, it's gone. And you know, when you split a bottle with somebody, that's, you know, that's reasonable. It's like going out to dinner and splitting a bottle of wine. But man, the box, even, I mean, I like saving money, but oh, that creates problems. Final question. My final question is, what is the one question that you have never been asked in an interview that you want to be asked? Something you want people to know about you that you've never talked about before?
Oh, I guess I don't ever get asked if I'm good at anything else other than comics. I'm kind of setting myself up for a fall now.
Oh,
But
no.
yeah.
Well, no. Is there something else that you're particularly good at that people just don't know and that you enjoy doing?
I'm a pretty good singer. I sing with a local band sometimes. But yeah. I
Oh,
used to be very good. Yeah, I used to be like grade 8, so I did exams and everything. I've not kept it up. It was always going to be either that or drawing as a career, and I chose drawing. I knew I couldn't really do both because you have to have a lot of time and a lot of dedication. But yeah, I still do it for fun sometimes, and people tell me I'm quite good, so.
that's fantastic. Have you ever recorded anything?
Not that would be available now, I'm afraid. But no, I used to do, but yeah. I probably have a CD somewhere in an old suitcase that's embarrassing, but nothing online, I'm afraid.
Well, I know you do have to pick one or the other. I mean, I can't imagine how someone could do both well. You know, the amount of time and
I
dedication.
know.
I mean, I'm the same way. I can't be great at one thing, but I can't be great at multiple things. You know, like someone that is a decathlete or a pentathlete, amazing athletes because they have all these skills. They're good at everything, but you know, something like an artistic skill, like drawing, writing, it's to really be good. I have to be singular focused about something that I like to do to be good at it and put all my energy into it if I really want to be good at it.
If you're going to do it as a career as well, it's not just the creative thing. You also have to know how to market it and how to promote it and how to set up a website and how to do your online shop. Like, there's so many things you've got to be good at. And I already feel like I'm spreading myself too thin with all my comic projects. I mean, if I was trying to be a singer as well, that would be too much.
Well, you've produced a lot of work and a lot of great work that I think touches and speaks to a lot of people. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk about all of these. There's more, but we've just scratched the surface here. But Isabella in Blodwyn is up next. It's being published through Unbound. Folks should check that out and go to your Etsy site and check out that work too. And you want to pony up and get the print, get the digital. Either way, it's a very satisfying, fun read. And I like the way you use humor to address very serious topics. And I find it's like the mask of comedy tragedy for drama, how to me they're two very closely tied emotions. Comedy tragedy. You know, like sometimes I'm the same way. I will deal with a bad situation with humor. Sometimes it's dark humor, but that's the way I manage to handle those things. And I like the way you do that. It's tough to address some of these things, especially when they're so personal and they speak to a lot of people who don't know that they aren't alone. But to use that humor, it helps to break down those barriers and kind of make people a little more comfortable and read the subject matter and really enjoy it. And it also sticks with them better when it's addressed through humor. You remember things better, like tips, how to handle things, some suggestions.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I guess comedy and tragedy are maybe two sides of the same coin, maybe.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about everything, and I wish you the best of luck, and I think you're doing a great job with everything I've read, and I'm glad you can do this professionally, because we need more writers and artists like you out there addressing all these different things. Comics are not just superheroes, folks. There's a lot out there, and like you said at the beginning, it's not just one thing. There is so much out there. It's like saying, I don't like TV. So there's something out there for everyone, and we're trying to get the word out so they know that, hey, these things exist. You should check them out. Rachel, thank you so much for being on Creator Talks.
Thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
Thank you for joining me for this edition of Creator Talks. I'll be back again next week with a report from Heroes Con. I'll be attending Heroes Con this weekend in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I will recap my experience of the show, give you my report, as well as some interviews from the convention floor. Please join me next week for the Heroes Con report and interviews. Thank you for joining me for Creator Talks this week. The show is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, and also on Amazon Echo and Dot devices. Just say, Alexa, play podcast Creator Talks to hear the latest episode. In addition, you can listen to the show and follow it through Podbean. Your feedback is greatly appreciated, so please rate and review on iTunes if you like the show or an episode that you heard. Your ratings and reviews go a long way to helping the show, and I can't thank you enough for taking a bit of time to do that. For your convenience, in the show notes of each podcast, I have a link to my iTunes page where you can rate and review the show and see the entire list of shows available. If you haven't heard them all, take a look through. There are living legends and up-and-coming comic creators. Tell family and friends who like comics and comic book creators about the show. And to subscribe, the content is free. Just as valued are your comments and feedback. You can reach me through Facebook and Twitter at Creator Talks Pod. That's at Creator Talks Pod. You can also reach out to me by email. You can find that at my website, creatortalks.com. At the website, you will also find blog posts, reviews of books that I have read that you might want to read too, my catalog of podcasts, and videos and other written articles on the website, creatortalks.com. A hearty thank you to all my guests. It is an honor and a privilege for you to make time to be on the show and talk to me about your work. It is your knowledge and insight into the creative process that makes the show so unique. My thanks also goes out to my family who makes this show possible, especially my executive co-producer, Mrs. Calloway. I'll be back each and every Thursday with a new interview. For Creator Talks, I'm your host, Christopher Calloway. Until next time.